Hey everyone, welcome back to Gals. I got an awesome guest this week. Maria Nagaga!
Yay, that's me!
That's you!
That's me!
All right, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay, my name's Maria Nagaga. Okay, that's actually an overkill because you already know.
I emphasize it so good that you can't even say your own name.
I can't say my own name anymore.
I killed
and
it for you.
And you actually pronounced it really well as well. I love it. So I'm part of the Visual Studio and .NET team. And I'm doing an interesting thing where we take community influence and impact mm-hmm. and all their conversations and turn it into a product. So I am responsible for millennials, so like us.
I'm actually 47. I just aged really well.
I'm 62, but don't tell me.
Don't tell me. Okay, so you're trying to get the millennials to use our products kind of approach?
Yeah, as a developer. So I think about Visual Studio and .NET and the conversations that we should be having, and also how should we be building our tools for the future?
What?
And how that can only impact our demographic of millennials, mm-hmm. but just all the demographics and people in different worlds. So if you actually make the acquisition of Visual Studio or getting on top of Azure or mm-hmm. learning .NET or C# in different ways, you influence people who have low bandwidth connectivity. You influence people who don't have all the tools installed on their computer mm-hmm. and they can do everything in the browser. Mm-hmm. So we look at things like that. How do we improve documentation?
So, so what's one key thing you've done this year that was like implemented for the millennials to grab onto Visual Studio and code with us?
I'm not allowed to talk about it yet.
Oh, okay. Ooh, it's coming out.
It's a surprise.
Is it during that big conference we have coming up?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so it's
a surprise. So you worked on that?
Yes.
Oh, that's exciting.
And the way it happened was I had this random idea, and then my boss's boss, Scott Hunter, was like, go write it in a proposal. And I wrote this proposal, and I was able to present it to our CVP, mm-hmm. Julia. And she was like, okay.
Oh, Julia Luisa, so, which we just had on Gals a couple
weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
She's awesome.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I look at her,
she's
like,
amazing.
I want to be you one day.
I want to be you.
I want to grow up, and I'll be just like you. And so I just presented it, and it hit home. Because
she's just staring at you and going, she's just like, yes.
She was like, yes. Give me more information, give me this, give me that.
And
it's really nice that you can do those kinds of things.
Were you nervous presenting in front of all these CVPs and high-ups? Or
no.
You were just so confident in your product?
Like, I kind of know what I'm doing here.
Nice.
So I was like, I'm okay.
Yeah. Wow. So before you got to Microsoft, let's talk about how you got here.
To Microsoft, yeah.
Like, rewind many, many years ago as a 67-year-old. Let's go back to where you grew up, what schools you went to, if you went to school, college, first job, all that.
Okay. So I grew up in a number of places.
Nice.
So I'm Ugandan.
So you like cultured.
Yeah,
you're like
say
a cultured
that.
Person.
Like people say that. They're like, oh, you grew up multiple. But yet everyone I know, I think just growing up as a child like this, had similar upbringings. Mm-hmm.
So you're just normal.
So I'm normal in my world.
Yeah.
But I grew up in England and Switzerland because my dad's an ambassador. So both my parents worked for the Foreign Service. And no, my sisters grew up in far more countries. Like they grew up in Ethiopia and New York and Denmark and all these really fancy places. So I grew up there and I never ever thought that I would be doing computer science. I was more of a storyteller. Mm-hmm. So if you've watched Kubu and the Two Strings, I was a lot like that character mm-hmm, where mm-hmm. I'd sit down and tell these magnificent stories and draw pictures and do all this stuff. And I also thought I'd be a writer. Then I realized I was dyslexic and that probably wasn't going to be the road for me.
Oh, no.
So I was dyslexic, so I was a great storyteller, really bad at putting it down into
paper. Wow.
And then I went and studied history. I finished and got a history degree.
Whoa.
I graduated and I just couldn't find a job that I was passionate about.
This was what university?
University of Cape Town.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So I graduated and I was like, oh, you know, I just don't know if I can do anything with this.
Like, were some jobs that you saw and you were just like, nah, I'm not gonna do that.
Most of them were in bank teller, receptionist. Mm-hmm. There was one, which was an investment firm that was accepting anyone who was passionate. Which kind of explains the recession. Like if you think about the future.
Oh, no.
But I wasn't passionate about any of them.
Yeah.
And then one day I was playing around at an internet cafe because this was before everyone had internet at their home. And I was in Uganda and I had gone to an internet cafe and I accidentally right clicked on something and then this whole code came up. Like these lines and lines.
So you just
things.
F11'd and
it wasn't
the
even
browser?
It wasn't even F11. It was like right-click view source. Uh-huh. And I accidentally right-clicked. I saw view source, and I was like, what does view source mean? And uh-huh. I saw all these different tags, and I didn't know what they meant. It was like these angle brackets, and there were these different like short key mm-hmm. abbreviations in it. So I had a flash drive. I put that file onto my flash drive, and I took it home. And when I took it home, it showed up as Internet Explorer. Uh-huh. And I double-clicked it, and this kind of looks like the page I was looking at, but without all the nice text and all the color and all that kind of stuff. So I started playing around with that code base, and was the Destiny's Child, you appreciate this, it was a Destiny's Child homepage, fan page. So I started playing around with it.
Like what, MySpace, or like what was?
No, it was one of those kind of thing. So I kept playing around, and I created my own fan page at home that wasn't anywhere but my computer. And then based on that, I went and did a diploma in software engineering, and then my parents are like, okay, you've shown that you showed interest. And I went to Dalhousie University in Nova Scotia, Canada, and did a degree in computer science and biomedical engineering.
Oh my God. All from a fan page.
Just from a fan page. So I have a deep love of Beyonce and Destiny's Child,
so
the reason I'm in tech. Yeah. Absolutely.
That is amazing. That is the best story
Absolutely.
I've heard of someone getting
Absolutely.
Into tech.
Yeah.
Accidentally.
Woo, what does this do? And then, like, you realize all these different things that you can do with code.
Wow.
Like, right now I'm writing a video game, which is also like a story, and it's using Unity. And I'm like, I actually can do this
yeah.
with code and do all the things I like to do.
That's a side project,
yeah.
too, right? It's not even part of your job.
It's not part of my job
nice.
At all. But I'm using things that are part of my job. So I'm using C#,
yeah.
and I'm using .NET, and I'm using a couple of things like that.
That's so cool. So Nova Scotia, is it cold?
Oh, man. That was a culture shock for me. It was so cold in Nova Scotia.
Oh, yeah.
And so much snow, but the people were so
friendly.
Nice.
It's actually one of the top countries I want to go to.
You want to go to Nova Scotia?
Yeah.
The province is
amazing. I saw a movie, and it was based there.
Yeah,
and it was about these hockey players, and I was like, it just looks so cool over there.
It is so cool. Like, Nova Scotia has, like, Halifax is, like, mm-hmm. the major town. And it's really...
And like the only airport, I think. I'm sure there's more.
No, there's another one. There's definitely another one. I just don't remember where it is. But Halifax is like a nice small town.
Mm-hmm.
And you get everything on one street.
Yeah.
And I spent my entire college life living in between the computer science building
uh-huh.
and the Atlantic Superstore. So any single Canadian who's watching this right now knows exactly what Atlantic Superstore is. So I spent my entire university life walking in a straight line.
4 years, just
woo,
that
back
is
and
awesome.
Forth. And like, it was really cool because most Canadian schools encourage people to do co-ops, and co-ops are paid internships,
mm-hmm.
which is huge. It makes such a huge, like, stress-free on your finances,
oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That you're able to do this. So while I was there, I worked at BlackBerry.
Nice.
Which was
booming, probably, then.
Which was
then.
Booming
yeah,
when
yeah,
I
yeah.
did it, right? It was like 2 years before the iPhone came out.
Oh.
So when I got the internship, everyone was like, oh.
So jealous.
We're so jealous.
You got a free BlackBerry, probably.
I got a free BlackBerry.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
They had this thing. Most of my friends had these horror stories of when they were interns at other companies.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just basically getting coffee, occasionally looking at code.
Yeah.
You really didn't own anything. One thing at BlackBerry is that they allowed you to own something.
Uh-huh.
So I was part of the R&D group. So as much as we're working on chips and stuff like that and what the future of the next form factor looked like,
mm-hmm.
They also said, how would you improve our overall process?
Nice.
So one of the things I noticed, I used to manually enter every single chip number into an Excel spreadsheet. And I was like, no, we can't automate that. So it was my first experience with ASP.NET, and I can't remember which ASP.NET it was at that
uh-huh.
time, probably like 2 or 3. And I created this whole web-based system and had a barcode scanner, so
wow.
you all had to do a scan and do all this stuff.
Look at you.
And it reduced, like, I can't remember how much they lost in spare parts because of this whole system.
Yeah.
And we were able to monitor builds, and that was just an internal tool I built.
Wow.
And then when I went back to BlackBerry, I started working on actual features that went into the BlackBerry Torch. And
so
then
you were doing an internship, and then after you graduated, you were working full-time?
Oh, no, it was 2 internships.
Oh,
I did
okay.
Like, the pay was that good.
Oh, wow.
So I just did back-to-back
yeah, yeah.
internships. It was amazing.
So when you went back, what did you start working on?
I worked on the BlackBerry Torch, and I worked on the playbook.
Okay.
So I got to work on it before it was actually a product. Uh-huh. And the cool thing is that they would also trick people within the company. So everyone was working on different form factors, so you never knew which version of the product was actually going to go out.
Oh.
So that was really cool, because you'd get this thing and you're just like,
it's mine.
What is this? And then somebody else says, mine doesn't look like that. So like, you want to work on so many top secret devices. It was so much fun.
Oh,
the R&D
cool.
was fun.
Where were they located? In Nova Scotia?
No, they're in Waterloo.
Okay.
In Waterloo. That's why you think, why do you think Microsoft is filled with Waterloo grads?
Yeah, that's true.
BlackBerry trained them. Yeah. It was fun.
So then what happened after you graduated?
After I graduated, I was recruited actually right into Microsoft. I did a couple of internships. Like, I worked at TELUS. I worked at some medical firms as well. Mm-hmm. But I was I was recruited out of college. Actually, before I graduated, mm-hmm. I was recruited by Microsoft. Mm-hmm. So I put in my resume online, believe it or not. Like, I actually put my resume in online. Yeah. And then the next afternoon, someone from recruiting called me. He's like, Maria, we would like you to interview at Microsoft. I was like, what? What's happening? And I ended up interviewing for the Skype team.
Nice.
And I got the job, but I was like, there's an offer in New York with another tech company. And they're like, okay, we'll work with you. And I became a technical evangelist.
What?
Yeah.
So you just told them, like, no, I want this New York gig. And they're like, sure, we'll put you in New York.
It's like, they said, give us a moment. Wow. Let's see what's out there in New York.
They wanted you that badly.
We can't make any promises. They said, we can't make any promises, but if it's important for you to be in New York, we will make it work. So I really lucked out in that sense, where there was a technical evangelist position opened. Mm-hmm. I was like, first of all, what is a technical evangelist?
Oh, I know. That was my number one question when I joined. I just pretended like I knew what it was. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I'll join that team.
Sure.
Yeah, so I had no idea what a technical evangelist was. Yeah. Like, do you want an interview? And I was like, okay, because there was something about Microsoft. I had interviewed with a bunch of tech companies, mm-hmm. But when I interviewed at Microsoft, I had a loop of six people. And of the six people, four of them were women. And one of them was a woman of color, Tara Walker. She's now at Amazon. And she was the first other black female engineer I'd ever met in my entire life.
Wow.
Before her, I didn't know we existed. I thought I was like the only one, because single internship, every single, like, you go to class, I was literally, I think I was either the first or second black woman to graduate from the computer science and engineering program at my school. They had not had other people in the past. So, and there were black people at the university. They just weren't in engineering. And so I met her, and I was so wowed by the interview experience at Microsoft. I was like, if there was an opportunity to stay in New York, I would 100% stay at this company, because you are my company of choice.
Because of just your interview process.
Just the interview process was just so different from any other interview process I had experienced. One, I was so challenged. At the end of one of my interviews, I actually said, give me a moment, and I had a bit of a cry. Because it was an intense, really deep dive. It was not light at all. I actually felt challenged. And it wasn't a cry of like, oh my God, have I failed? It was like, oh my God, I'm so excited about this process.
Wow.
So yeah, and I ended up as a technical evangelist.
And that's what you've been, and then you were doing that for how many years before you moved over to the?
3 years.
Okay.
3 years, and then last year I moved over to the .NET team working for Scott Hanselman.
Did Hanselman come after you?
No, Hunter did.
Really? Hunter found you?
Hunter found me. Actually, somebody else bumped into me at a Connect conference in 2015. The Connect event.
Yeah, that's where we have it. We have it in New York for day one.
Exactly. And I was there and I was hanging out. And Amanda Silver, if you know her, she was like, you're really interesting. And then Jay Schmelzer was like, I want to talk to you. And then Scott Hunter.
You were like the celebrity.
I was like, I'm a celebrity. And then Scott Hunter was like, I told Scott Hunter, oh, I know one of your, you know, direct reports, Scott Hanselman. He's awesome. And then we started talking. And then I went through this interview loop. And then all of a sudden, Hunter was on this loop. And I was like, he's like, oh, yeah, I remember talking to you. And I was like,
wow.
Really?
That's amazing. Because you're really involved in the community out there. Being a technical evangelist in New York, you have to go to meetups and all those things.
Exactly.
You got your name out there, your face out there, and everyone's like.
And I was really passionate about our products. And
which
I was really
totally felt like you could see it in someone when they go present and they care about it.
You can
tell
feel
the difference.
It.
Yeah.
It's like when you see like Casey Uhlenhut present about Roslyn compilers, and I was like, everyone should be using Roslyn, right? Why aren't they?
How is someone so passionate about Roslyn? I don't understand, but she sells it.
She sells it. I'm just like, I need to go do that. I need to find the docs. I need to do it. Or like when you hear Hanselman talk about like Azure or .NET, or just like, oh, I'm a convert.
I'm sold.
I know exactly.
Yeah.
I'm sold.
They care so much.
So they really care about it. And I think they found interest because I really owned the academic metric. Like we have this concept of metric in DX, and I owned it. Like we had no Microsoft presence within New York schools. So I owned New York and New Jersey. And by the time we're done, they knew who we were. Mm-hmm. They were talking about us. Nice. I still get invited to speak. I used to teach at NYU.
I was gonna say when I was in university, Microsoft was not the cool hip thing to know.
Neither.
So
me
too. I'm hoping you change that perception because now working here in this day and age, I'm like, wow. The things we do is super cool and
exactly.
hip and like innovative.
I know, and the thing is that we are also learning as a company to tell our story more, and I think we're doing a good job as that. Like even from the coding perspective, the fact that we have more open source development, we have more free tools. Like I would have never used Visual Studio unless it was pirated, but I would have never used Visual Studio as a student because that was a cost I couldn't have.
For
and now
sure.
there's Visual Studio Community, there's Visual Studio Code.
C#
and .NET are no longer strictly for
we're
Windows.
We're totally different now,
We're a totally different company. Mm-hmm. Like I was talking to a bunch of my peers. There's a group of people called the Practical Dev. You should check them out. Mm-hmm. And one of them came up to me and said, we want you to do an entire post series on .NET and .NET Core. Mm-hmm. And I was like, really? Because they're all about Node and Go. And they're like, yeah, .NET Core is cool. And I was like, yeah, cool. Like, and you're trying to cool it down. Like, I'm not that excited that you said this, but yeah.
That's awesome.
But they said Microsoft is doing some really cool things.
Yeah.
Look at our hardware.
Yep.
I want the Surface,
studio,
the studio,
yeah.
so.
The dial, the studio, just, oh yeah, because you draw.
I draw, and I was just like.
Yeah,
I
should get you one of those.
I saw that, I tried to tell my boss, do you think I could get one? And he's like, will it make you a better coder? And I was like, yeah.
You should have said it.
I should have said it,
you
but I can't,
sold
I can't
it somehow.
Lie to my boss. Like
I know.
he's just so honest. You just have to be honest with him.
We'll make you a better coder. We could.
Is it? Will it make
I could program for the dial. I could. Oh man, let's go back to being the first female, woman of color at your university. So what was that like? What were some challenges?
I think one, also I was the only girl who graduated that year because I realized when
what?
Yeah, I know, it's pretty crazy, right? Because when we joined, we were, we also didn't have a huge class because this is Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
And Dalhousie is also a very niche, very research-oriented school, and they don't expect huge classes. Mm-hmm. So we were about 14, 15 people when we first joined.
Okay.
We were about maybe four girls. By the time we graduated, I was the only girl.
Did they all just change majors?
They all changed majors. One moved to occupational therapy. Mm-hmm. Another one went to biology. Another one went to business. We just started dwindling down.
Mm-hmm. I mean, your first degree was history.
Exactly, right?
People change minds.
People change minds all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of them, like one of my friends just left because she was like, I can't deal with this anymore. Mm-hmm. I can't deal with the fact that, I think one of the big challenges that we had was when you went through the intern program, was the boys always got selected first. Mm-hmm. Like, they always got selected first. And that was always really daunting because I was like, hold up, I have one of the higher grades. Mm-hmm. Like, why am I one of
the... Is it the interview process, you think, or what was it?
Oh, you wouldn't even get into the interview process. So they have these round sections. So they have three rounds of interview loops. So we found that the boys always got interviews in loop one, and we always got interviews in loop two or three.
Hmm.
And this was not only something that I had experienced, that girls in the years ahead of me had experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to the Career Services Center, and we said we should just do blind resume applications and just use a number. And there was actually a significant change where, you know, it wasn't like... Some people still ended up in two and three, but you had a lot more girls. And this wasn't only in our department. It was in all departments across the university. So when we introduced that, we actually saw there was more of
a balance. Yeah.
Because we realized, are they looking at our name? Are they looking at their grade? Because I always thought it was your GPA. So I invested every single thing to get straight A's. Because I always thought, your GPA is what they look at. Like, that's what they look at. And the first time you do your interview process is kind of really intense because you have no work experience, mm-hmm. right? All you have is school. Mm-hmm. And when you see that happening, you're just like, okay, how does this happen?
Interesting.
How does this happen for you? So we introduced the concept of blind, mm-hmm. blind application.
So they still implement that today?
I need to check, mm-hmm. but we also have a lot more girls going in these days than we did. And I used to, there was one girl when I joined, she was the only other black girl in undergraduate. Because like in graduate programs, you're going to see more diversity because mm-hmm. you have people coming in from all over the world. In undergraduate programs, it's usually people from within the area. And if you look within the area, it's pretty, you know, they're not that many mm-hmm. people of color within Nova mm-hmm. Scotia. So it kind of made sense when you see that. But I remember there was this one girl, and she was African-Canadian. And she joined the computer science program. And I made sure I worked with her until she graduated. And I was like, you're going, you're not leaving.
She was your mentee.
She was a mentee. So I was like, you have a problem with an assignment?
Yeah.
You Skype me. I know I am
awesome
leaving
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to another place. Mm-hmm. But if you need help with an assignment, if you need like help writing your resume, if you need any of that.
Wow.
And I think she's starting at Lockheed
uh-huh,
Martin.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So I'm just like, yeah.
Again, airspace crafts and spaceships and
I'm very proud.
Cool stuff, yeah.
I'm very proud. But she's like, times she's like, oh, I want to give up. Like, I just feel so alone. And I was like, no. If you want, one, it's important to work with your team. I'm not saying go and create a girl group. You also need to make sure that within your team of your friends and the people that you're in school with is that you create a sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did to do that, because I did realize I was the only woman in my class and I was the only person of color in my class. Mm-hmm. But rather than feeling isolated, what I decided to do was like, how do I become not the focal point, but how do I become the person they go to?
Mm-hmm.
So I started thinking, oh, let's do whiteboard testing. And I'd have people sign up. Like, how do you start writing your code on a whiteboard? Because I had this interview experience mm-hmm. when I went to interview for Microsoft as an intern. And I'd share that. And I just created this culture of sharing. Let's do code reviews. Let's do all this kind of stuff. Let's work as a team. And I found that's what really helped me get through
that
the program.
That is literally what you do for work now.
Yeah, I know. I get paid for that, right?
Wow.
I was like,
things have fallen into place. Yeah.
And now I was just like, now I get paid to do that stuff. So, yeah.
What is it like being on the team at Microsoft that you're in right now? Is it getting more diverse over time? Or is there a sense of community? Or?
There is a sense of community. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a sense
of the .NET community.
The .NET community. Yeah. And I think that's really interesting when you think about the role that I had before and mm-hmm. the role that I have right now. DX is a wonderful, incredibly challenging role,
mm-hmm.
and I think is a great way for people to understand how consumers actually work.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also working on a different product, if not every year, sometimes twice a year. One moment you might be working on Azure, the next moment you might be working on Windows, the next moment you might be working on Office, so it tends to change a lot. And that can be amazing. It can be absolutely amazing. But you also don't get to grow your community that much because you're just like, hey, Windows community. And then you're like, okay, now I'm on Azure community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But with the .NET community, you're growing and taking that feedback from the .NET community.
Yeah.
So I also have a greater challenge where I have to figure out how do we create new .NET communities?
Yep.
So the people who haven't been using it since the very day it was created.
Because
sometimes I have conversations with people who have been working on this for 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I was talking to Matt Gertz, who is one of the principal software engineers and was one of the people who worked on C# and the compiler and every single version of Visual Studio that has ever existed.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, how do I take Matt's amazing knowledge and dilute it so that somebody who is brand new to the system completely understands it?
Yeah.
Because they don't care about what DLLs are and BCLs are. They
mm-hmm.
just care like, okay, so
how easy
is it for me to get started?
Mm-hmm.
So kind of condensing those experiences has been a big one for me.
Yeah, I think that's something we're lacking is getting the new young generation to get their hands dirty with the product and not just Hello World. I want a little bit more.
Exactly.
Right? Is it just me or has Hello World just like, it kind of disheartens you sometimes? You're like, I need
something
a little more practical, like a calculator or a tic-tac-toe. I don't know. Just something.
You need something more.
Yeah. And but not like, you know, the crazy.
No, you don't need the crazy.
Yeah.
But you need like that grow up plan.
Yeah.
So how do I grow beyond this? And
mm-hmm.
what does that experience look like?
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really big.
Yep.
And how do we do it without overwhelming people? Because I always tell people, the things underneath, if someone is truly passionate about it, they will find out.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to pile it all on top of them at that one moment.
Yep.
So those are one thing that I've been like, and also, when people think about our generation and the younger generation of people who are learning, they think about, oh, these guys have no idea. And I was like, no, they do know.
Yeah.
They do know. They just want to know, how do I quickly adapt to this?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when you see platforms like Code Academy, I don't know if you've heard of them, or Free Code Camp, or Code School, and these are all people that I work with to kind of get them excited about
C#. Onlining?
They're all online.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And I think one of the things that they've done really well is, how do we remove the install experience. Because when I was in school,
Now, I just went and downloaded VS 2015. It was like that. But then I had really fast internet here.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right?
I was going to say, I don't know. At home, it'd probably be brutal.
It would be brutal. So imagine if you wanted to learn how to build, let's say you want to do something like Hello World, right? So in the past, if you wanted to do Hello World, you'd look at a tutorial. It's like, get Visual Studio. Okay, let's install Visual Studio. Okay, now you have to figure out how to do File, New, Project, Console Application, type in console, write line, Hello World.
Yeah.
So you just installed a tool to just say Hello World.
Yes, that's
true. You can't do that anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because people are now writing things in the console where you're just like, npm, install what you need to do, and then you write your first learn a world code. Or you can type Python, and then the console opens up for you. And those are different things that we're working on.
Yeah.
Like, how do you do it locally without the hassle of installing everything? And not the hassle, but like without the overwhelming experience. How do you do things like that in the browser? How do you do them in the command line? How do you do all those different things?
Yep.
And then when you're ready, you'll say, you know what, I'm ready to
go explore more options, the IDE that's robust and has all these capabilities,
Yeah, because I had a friend who was using Visual Studio. She was using Sublime, and then she moved over to Visual Studio Code, and she taught herself how to code. And she's like, no, I think I've outgrown editors. I'm going to move into an IDE. But she made that choice. She actually learned how to grow up.
Yeah.
And that's how people are learning now.
Yeah,
like, they'll know when to use the tools they need to
Interesting.
Use.
Interesting. Yeah. So, that's cool. You just need to guide them. To give them the story.
You just need to give them the story.
Yeah.
Like, you just need to do that thing. Like, you set the story up for them.
Yeah.
You tell them.
You got the coolest job.
And you are going to go there.
You have such a fun job.
It is fun. Because I just get to create stuff.
Yeah. And you're still in New York.
Still in New York.
Yeah. So how often do you come back to Redmond?
Whenever I can. So I think it's roughly every 2 months now.
Okay.
Every 2 months,
And how is it working with Scott Hanselman? He's a big niner. He's been a big channel niner for 10 years now or something. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Huge presence online. Everyone loves him. What is it like working with him?
I'm joking. Working with Scott is great because it's really good to work with someone who knows their stuff, really, truly loves their stuff, loves to share, and has this really genuine respect within the community. Like, I've been talking to people, and I'm like, oh yeah, Scott Hanselman approved. And these are people who are like, no, I do not like Microsoft stuff.
Wow.
But then they're like, oh yeah, I saw Scott Hanselman do that. Yeah, I'll check that out.
Wow.
So it's really good having that person has that genuine respect for people in the community, and they respect him back.
Yeah.
And he's not like, oh, I'm so fancy.
Yeah.
He's not
fancy at all.
No, he's just saying, I'm not famous. And then we're walking into like his favorite place, Qdoba. And I'm like, oh my God, are you Scott Hanselman? Can I take a picture with you? And I'm just like, dude, who are you? Like the Beyonce of the .NET community? You're like, there's a time when we literally
should we make a fan page?
We should make a fan
with your original code.
Yes.
Your original Destiny
the
Child
very,
fan
very,
page code.
And just throw his face.
Let's throw his face in there. I'm so down.
It's ridiculous. So people are like, can I take a picture of you? And he's like, sure. And I was like,
does that get in the way of like your like, because you're trying to, you know, get in the community and get your face out there and get your talks out there. Is he like blocking you somehow?
No.
Is he encouraging?
He's 100% encouraging.
Yeah.
Says, you should try this, you should try that. Mm-hmm. And he also lets me go and explore it on my own. So like, he's like, hey, I know this person, you should put her in. It's more like, you should try out, and this is kind of what they are looking for.
Yeah.
Just see if it's a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
It's also like, it's good to drop his name sometimes. Like, hi, like I've got so many email responses when I'm just like,
plus Hanselman.
Or not even that, I just put like, question from this and this, Maria on Hanselman's team. I was like, boom!
Oh, instant reply.
Someone said, oh, hey, Scott, nice to hear from you. He wasn't even on the email.
Love it.
It wasn't on the
email.
But
that's
great. I've done that before.
Oh, that's amazing. So what's something you're, well, you can't talk about what
it's
you're working
secret.
On. It's a secret. But you're excited to announce it.
I am so excited about it. I am so, so
excited. Is that going to take up the rest of your year?
Probably it's going to be one of the many projects I'm working on the rest of the year.
Nice.
Because I wrote this document of how we
No, I'm just kidding. Go on.
But I wrote this document of how we should be building tools for the next generation.
Yep.
And even for the current generation, how should we be thinking about the direction of how our tools should be built and how our languages and stuff like that. It was well received, so I'm going to be working on a couple of the projects out of that. So.
I mean, the Microsoft in general is trying to get on the younger generation. I mean, the creators update. It's for the creator generation.
Exactly.
Which is the YouTubers, the kids making like music on their computers, the all that stuff. And that's like what we're trying to enable every person. And that's like the goal of Windows, of Visual Studio, of Office.
Our entire heart, like people who see the studio these days, like I know artists, because I know a couple of artists. And I showed one of my friends the studio and she was just like, she looked at it, canceled her order for her MacBook.
Wow.
And she said, I'm going to spend on this. Because she said, I can actually touch it.
Yeah.
I can touch it. And when she saw the dial, she was like, well, anytime I can zoom in, color it in, do the stuff. And then, you know, like parts of Doctor Strange were put on, done on the Surface or something.
Oh, really?
Like that. I think I saw it in an ad. I think, oh, no, no, it wasn't that. It was this really nice cartoon about the Day of the Dead or something like that, but they did it on the Surface.
That's so cool.
They did it on the Surface.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's pretty cool.
All right, let's put work aside. Okay. No more talking about work. What do you do for fun?
Ooh, I draw.
Yeah.
I recently started kickboxing.
Uh-huh.
It is fun. I can't believe I did that.
But you draw, huh?
I do draw.
So what, you sell your art or just for fun or display it at shows?
People have started want me to start selling my art. So
I've seen it.
You've seen it?
Yeah. So. I looked it up. It is bomb. I would totally buy it.
So like I've been thinking about doing an art show on that because just for reference with people, I like to put afros on iconic characters.
Yeah.
And I love it.
So picture Wonder Woman with an afro. It's awesome.
It's all the things. Like, I have Princess Peach with an afro. She's the phone cover for my case. But I've been thinking about, like, doing an art show and putting it on stuff.
Etsy, anything.
I was thinking about doing it on Etsy. Yeah. A friend of mine who actually owns an art gallery in Queens, that's where I live, is actually thinks that I should do a show.
Yeah.
And I was like, would people come? And he was like, it's pretty wacky. He's like, of course people would buy it. I was like, oh my God, I can be rich.
Oh, you should totally do it.
I could. I want to do it. Yeah. I definitely want to do it.
How did you just get, you just got into that randomly? Have you always been drawing, painting?
I've always been drawing, but like being able to just draw on your machine is just less daunting than
what
a piece of paper. So I use Adobe Illustrator.
Okay.
So I use a lot of Illustrator, but when I'm in a hurry, sometimes I use this Paint app.
The one that shows like the paints really the Microsoft the, one, right?
Yeah. It is so some of the work I've done
in
that. One of like if you look at one of my pieces, which is the ballerina with an afro, I did that on my phone using the Paint app.
Nice.
I did that on my Nokia 1020 using the Paint app.
Just your finger?
No, you could get this stencil thing. But people are like, you did that on your phone? I was like, yeah.
With my pinky. With my eyes closed. It was crazy.
Yeah, with my nail and I put it in and stuff like that.
That's so cool.
So yeah, painting, drawing is a huge part for me.
Yeah.
Also, I know it's kind of cliche, but listening to very funny podcasts has become like my favorite thing.
Funny?
Like there are so many great podcasts on these days. One of them is Two Dope Queens. You should definitely listen to that.
Is it just like a comedy hour between
it's a
two?
And they have all these guests on.
Yeah.
And I went to watch them live. Absolutely brilliant. And I
haven't done that. I haven't listened to comedy podcasts.
You
I'm always looking at like these growing into a better person, money, this podcast. I need to focus on fun podcasts.
You need to focus on fun content. And there's so many great ones. So Jessica Williams.
Okay.
Do you know who she is? She was on The Daily Show.
Give me more.
So The Daily Show. She had these amazing braids.
I need more. Anything else she's like?
She's beautiful. She looks like me.
She looks like me. She's beautiful, amazing.
She's like everything cool. I didn't think about anything.
Yeah.
Like,
I'll look her up.
You'll look her up.
I'm sure if I saw her, but yeah.
But yeah, she has this great podcast with Phoebe Robinson, who's another comedian, who has another podcast called Too Many White Guys. Which is interesting.
So what? These girls have like three different podcasts?
They have like three different podcasts.
How do they have time in the day?
I don't know how they do that and they have jobs. But then.
Are you going to do a podcast?
I have one podcast episode.
Oh, yeah?
And then when your boss is the ultimate podcaster, you're just like, it's okay.
No. I think you should utilize him. Like, hey, can I borrow some of that gear?
But he keeps on saying, where's your podcast? Where's your podcast?
See?
Where's
your podcast? He wants you to have a podcast. You should do it. What was your first one on?
It was about something called, I called industry isolation. Mm-hmm. So I had three of my friends who all happened to be the token women of color in the different tech companies that they were in. Mm-hmm. Or not in the entire, but like in their core groups.
Yeah. And they all work at tech companies.
They all work at tech companies. Okay. And we had this frank conversation on how it's a little bit isolating and different things that you can do to actually encourage more women into tech, different things that you can do in your everyday job. What are some of the hard things that you've experienced? Mm-hmm. And it's done pretty well. Like, I've got a couple of people still sending me tweets or sending me messages on when are you going to do another one? Because they like the whole idea of industry isolation. Because that was from the perspective of women of color in tech, right? But I wanted to do one on, like, what is it like to be a remote worker when everyone else on your team is having conversations in the hallway? I was also going to do one on disability as well, and how we need to start building tools better that people feel more empowered when they're using our tools. So I was looking at, actually not disability, accessibility is the right word to use. So I looked at accessibility as well. So it was just looking at different ways that we are unintentionally isolating people and we don't realize that we are doing that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't only have to do with race or gender. Mm-hmm. It also just has to do with capabilities.
Yep.
Like, as a person who's dyslexic, sometimes when people send really long emails, I'm just like, oh no.
Yeah.
I have to deal with this. And having tools in there where I can switch to dyslexic font really, really fast, rather than having to copy and paste it and put it into another tool or switch the other thing, but just being able to easily switch between fonts.
The worst ones for me are when someone writes it, it's a super long paragraph.
Oh my
God. No bullet points, no breaks, no. I'm like, oh, I can't look at that. I usually ignore it. I can't.
I know, but it's bad when it comes from like your boss or your boss's boss.
You can't ignore.
Those I actually have to sit down and read.
Wow, yeah.
But if someone tells me that they notice that my emails are always like header, table, diagram, bullet point, all those kind of things. They're like, Maria, this email is wonderful. How did you do that? I was like, this is because it's the only way I know how to read this.
That's just easier to read for everyone.
It's just easier to read. So I just like, this is a demographics. I have tables and outcomes and bullet points. And I was like, if you have any questions, feel free to ping me and I'll call you.
I would love to see a podcast on the younger generation, millennials.
Oh.
How to work. Sometimes I'm in the studio and they'll be like, all of us are young, like everyone else left the door. So I'll have like Caitlin, who's our editor. I'll have Nicola, who does This Week on Channel. And there's a couple of us there.
Yeah.
And I just look around. I get really excited. I'm like, oh man, this is the future. I don't know what it is. It just makes me really happy. And then, it's just nice. It's like, how do we work more together? How do we do this? We're going to be the future. We're running everything. Yeah,
that would be a good one to do, because there's also this whole thing about like millennials. When millennials work with other millennials, I was reading a paper that they tend to be more progressive, not progressive, but more active, more willing to speak out. Mm-hmm. And then if they're with other people who are of an older generation, they tend to keep quiet because there's this stereotype of that we are just going to butt in and say whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
And this is not with everyone, but I have noticed.
I have seen this.
You've seen it where people are just like, really quiet.
Or the younger generations, it is in a room full of older people. I'd be like me and another person. I see that person. I'm more quiet when I'm in a room with older people. But this other person will keep making the point to talk out, talk loud, talk this. And it's the extremes. I'm not trying to contribute. They're really trying to make
a
point. And it's like, where can we find a good balance where I'm contributing, they're contributing, everyone else is contributing.
Exactly. I think it's all about, like, we all have to. I was telling my team, like, we just all have to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you give everyone a chance.
If I was a manager, I'd have everyone in the room at the end of the meeting say, like, their thoughts.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's important where, you know, when you have, like, stand-ups, I think it's really important that everyone says something. Like, everyone is given, like, 5 minutes to say something.
Yep.
And at the end, let's give feedback, because the moment you interrupt someone, you might shut down their idea.
Yeah, some people are really good at interrupting, and others are just not comfortable with it.
No, I'm not comfortable with interrupting.
I hate it.
Like, I will actually listen to you and then give you my feedback, and it's up to you if you take it or not, or give you my opinion, and I really expect the same person to do this. Mm-hmm. But there are times when you're just like, I think we should do this. Hold up. What are you saying? What? This is making me uncomfortable.
That would just throw me off, and I would just be like stunned and not know how to reply.
Exactly. Yeah. But like just being able to like sit down, listen, take it in, and then give it back. And like I've seen that a lot with, I don't know if you've ever been in a meeting with Julia.
Luisan? No.
So she does that, like where you have a conversation with her, she sits down, she listens, she takes a moment, she gives you back, and her insight is just like, wow.
How did her brain work so fast?
That's literally what I said. I was like, wow.
Maybe one day we'll be at that level.
Maybe one day.
Enough practice.
Because she just like, she sits down, she listens, she's like, okay, that's really good. So how would you do this, and this? I'm just like, wow, mind blown.
How did you think
But
of
I think
that,
that's how it comes with experience.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And also just listening to people. Like some of the most successful people I've met are people who just sit down, listen, and truly listen, mm-hmm. and then make a fair assessment mm-hmm. afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that I'm that person one day.
Yeah. One day we'll be at that level.
Yeah. Maybe one day.
Oh, you're not too far from that.
Yeah, you're trying to say I'm old.
Old. Man, I could talk to you for hours. I was saying you really need a podcast because I would listen to you. So I would listen to every episode.
Maybe you'll be my second group of guests.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do a millennial one.
Let's do it.
You saw it now. We're going to do it.
I'm already paying for a subscription to host my one episode.
Oh, then you have
to. So I better just start using.
Just to be fiscally responsible.
I need to start using that because it's costing me $9 a month.
We're done. After this is done, we're going to go record this real
quick.
Let's
just record this. How do we think about millennials?
Oh, man. Okay, so let's wrap it up.
Okay.
Let's see. Actually, before we go to the lightning round, which is like my fast-paced questions. Let's do, what's your future goals in your career? Where do you see yourself? And like, I hate that question, but I'm going to ask you. I hate when people look at me. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? I'm like, I'm eating tonight for dinner, okay? I don't need these.
Oh, yeah. Have
but what are your long-term goals in life?
I want to run the world.
That's right, girl.
Like, honestly, like Game I do want to run the world. It's done. But I do want to go into leadership where I'm making more decisions on where things are going. Mm-hmm. And maybe one day be CEO. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not here,
I could
somewhere.
See you running. Running a company, and it would just be so smart. And just everyone would have a chance to talk.
It's a utopia.
It's of
listening and making things happen.
Yeah.
So that's, I think I do want, I actually once joked with my very first boss ever at Microsoft, mm-hmm. and he was like, where do you want to be in 5 years? And I was like, I want your job.
Nice.
I was like, oh, Bob Familiar.
Did they get scared?
No, he said, okay, let's work on that.
Oh.
That's literally what he said.
That's
amazing. He's now a VP at another company. But once in a while, I hear from him, and he was like, do you have my job yet?
Amazing.
Because it's almost 5 years at Microsoft.
Yeah.
He's going to be like, do you have my job yet?
I love it.
So yeah,
what a great manager.
I want to go into leadership.
Oh,
so I'll figure out what that looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do want to go into like more changes. But mm-hmm. the most important thing is that can we make things truly accessible? If I am building anything that gives a person in America the same opportunity as a person where I'm from, Uganda, mm-hmm. where you have access to the same tools and the same level of exposure and education, especially when it comes to code, mm-hmm. that to me is huge. Because we have code being more accessible here because mm-hmm. we have faster, higher bandwidths. But then I have so many friends back home who are learning how to build their own Android applications using a book because they don't have access to internet at home. And they're doing well, like they're building businesses, they're doing all these really cool things.
That's amazing.
Just creating this level playing field.
Oh yeah. If you can make everyone the same, bring them up on this level, we would see some crazy apps and technology and innovation.
Innovation. If everyone in the world had the same level of exposure mm-hmm. and also accessibility mm-hmm. to those tools mm-hmm. and those resources.
It'd be an amazing world.
It's going to be an amazing because we have everyone having equal opportunity. Yep. And like this is not only in America. Even people in America don't have as much equal opportunity as they should.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to look back on this video in a couple of years and be like, oh, I did get that.
I did get it.
I did become that manager. Oh, I do run my own company. I'm saving the world. That's what I like about video. You're going to see this one
like,
day.
Like, oh my God, it's
this
it.
Home video we made.
This home video that we made in this very fancy studio.
And you're going to be like, oh yeah, that was my dream. It did happen. That's amazing. All right, okay. Lightning round.
Oh, should I be scared?
A little bit?
Oh my God.
Okay, no, okay. I'm joking. All right, ready? Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Okay, that was really fast. Now I don't have the next question lined up in my head. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Which was the biggest, worst buyer remorse you've had for a piece of technology? Something you've purchased in the last couple of years and you're like, no, I don't use it. Why did I buy that?
I'd have to be my iPod Nano.
Is that the little one?
There was
one?
A little one which was a square because I never, ever, ever used that.
Yeah.
And I saved for that.
Oh.
I wouldn't say the bad word. But I saved for that stuff because I was in college.
Oh,
and I couldn't afford it anyway,
man.
But I saved and I bought it. And it's literally still sitting in my house because I was like,
does it still turn on?
I don't even know. I just can't throw it away because I spent money on it when I did not have money. Yeah.
I have a drawer full of old technology. I just have a weird attachment too. I just can't throw it away.
Can't throw it away. Yeah. I spent money on it.
I know. I spent so much money and so much savings on that. What is your favorite programming language?
C#.
Yeah. How's your Unity doing? Is it easy now that you know C# to go to Unity and build a game?
Unity is so much fun to use because they have so many great built-in libraries and they have great documentation. So it's really fast.
Yeah, a lot of copy-paste.
Really, Oh, and there's nothing wrong with copy and pasting as long as you understand what you're copying and pasting.
Yep.
That's
true.
Yeah.
Although I did watch this tutorial once and there was like, never copy and paste. But I think it was just trying to teach us to write it out, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, so I get that part.
But, yeah. But if like, don't copy a whole entire method or function.
But
if
you're just
like,
doing, yeah.
I need this library, why am I individually writing the entire line out? Just like, copy and throw it in there and then you get,
What kind, do you listen to music when you work?
Yes.
What kind of music?
Beyonce.
Are you serious?
It doesn't even need a genre.
Still?
She brought me here.
She's just on loop for you.
It is always and will always be Beyonce. I know every single word, right?
Of every song?
Yeah, to the last album. Like, I went to her concert last year, and I was with my cousin, and she was just looking at me. She's like, and I was like, one of those crazy people. Like,
were you crying?
No, I wasn't that. I'm past that age. Me 10 years ago, yes, I would be crying. But it's always Beyonce. If not Beyonce, I don't want to be cliche, but sometimes it's classical music.
You know what? When I'm reading a book, that's like the only thing I can listen to, like in a car or in the shuttle or something or public transportation. If I'm reading, I can't just have noise.
Yeah.
But I need some type of music. But I can't listen to like something with lyrics. So it has to be something classical.
It has to be classical, or it has to be a TV show. Like, honest, I've watched some really bad TV shows while just coding and just listening to the actors in the background. Like, do you remember The O.C.?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I loved the
I OC loved
as a
it,
kid.
But have you rewatched it now?
Watching those shows that you loved when you were younger, you
it
just feel really weird. Yeah, you just feel guilty. It's just
with the exception of Smallville, because Tom Welling was just gorgeous. But yeah, sometimes it's like,
what happened to him? Is he still acting?
He got old.
He's like balding.
No, he still looks good, but he just looks much
older. Older, yeah.
Much older, yeah.
He was too good looking for a high school student.
I remember like, even my mom was like, we would all watch Smallville, and like my dad would be like, "What happened?"
Shh, Dad.
Yeah, that was that. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, that was amazing. All right, which product, either at Microsoft or outside of Microsoft, would you love to work on? Like Uber, Blue Apron, HoloLens.
Okay, outside of Microsoft, I think I would really like to work at Code Academy, which is like the online coding experience.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of building that up. I think within Microsoft, I know it's really cliche, but what I'm doing now, because we build other things that people use.
Yeah. So. I'm going to say the .NET group is one of the coolest.
We built
it. I'm not going to lie. Everyone that works there is like, why are you so cool?
I don't know. We just like,
they're
just
a cool group of kids.
Yeah, they're probably going in and they're like, qualifications, coolness. Please come,
please come in.
Yeah. But yeah, I think what I'm doing right now, because you never think about the impact that what we build influences what the Windows team is doing and what the Azure team is doing and what other people at different companies are doing. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, wow.
Yeah, you're shaping all that.
They're like I think we're like 1,000. I can't remember how many people who build this. And then you think about the range of people who use this every day. And
that's
you're just
amazing.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
You're something, you build things that other developers use. And that's huge.
That's super cool.
It's super cool.
What is something you spend money on that makes your life easier?
Clothes.
You are a fashionista. You do have the best websites for buying clothes.
Thank you.
Is that another hobby? buying clothes.
It's not even a hobby. It's like a way of life. Yeah. It's a way of life where I just do it.
You're so
wonderful. I just do it.
And how does it make your life easier?
Because like when I dress well, uh-huh. like that sounds terrible, but I feel like it lightens my mood. Yeah. But to tell you the truth, the product that I use that makes my life really, really easy is Purple Carrot.
What's that?
So Purple Carrot is like Blue Apron, uh-huh. where they actually deliver these meals to you at home. Uh-huh. But this is completely vegan.
Based. So you cook it?
You cook it.
Okay.
So like even the fact that you have to stand up and cook something uh-huh. and not rely on Seamless, uh-huh. that makes my life so much easier.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to think about what I'm going to make for dinner. Uh-huh. It's already told to me.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
it's like having my mom, but I go to get the food instead. But yeah.
Did you cancel your subscription for this week since you're here?
I did. I was like, oh my God, it was the first thing when I booked my flight. Whenever I book my flight, yeah. it's the first thing
Let
I do.
Let me go and skip
Purple
this
Carrot.
Week.
Let me go and skip that week because otherwise it's going to show up at my house.
Oh,
but that makes my life so much easier.
Nice.
So much. I'm all about convenience apps.
Yeah, yeah.
They're the best.
Oh, yeah. I think our generation has so many subscriptions on so many things, but it is to make our lives easier.
Yeah, and we can concentrate
on
work.
It. Yeah.
We can concentrate on work.
I know. Like, our grandparents didn't have all this stuff, so they didn't spend as much money, but I get to focus on work now.
Exactly. And to be honest, like, all these other things are actually cheaper for me. In New York,
yeah.
going to the grocery store.
Exactly.
So much cheaper. Yeah. yeah.
Okay, that's cool. Like using Uber versus having a car or, yeah.
Oh, I haven't driven a car since 2007.
That's the way.
I was just like,
I hate driving.
I was like, like someone said, maybe you should go back and do your lesson.
I was going to say,
I live in New York. So I don't drive. Like,
so when you stay here in Redmond, which is not a big city, it's not good public transportation here. How do you get around?
Lyft.
Okay.
I just get the app and I get bum 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 done.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so much cheaper here than
yeah.
it is in New York. Uh-huh. So I don't feel as bad when
I. So you haven't driven a car
since 2007. Wow. I haven't had to, like, as I told you in college, it was in between
one road.
It was a line. It was literally a line. And I had one of those old lady carts, like, so I put my groceries in and I wasn't
That's
like
so
I didn't
cute.
Have to stop. And then I moved to New York
mm-hmm.
and I didn't have
yeah.
to drive. But as a result, like, I just rely on subways, which is amazing.
Yeah.
If I want to go to the Catskills or upstate New York, there are these things called other trains
mm-hmm.
that take you up there,
there
and
you
buses
go. Yeah.
and all those other things. So yeah, I haven't driven a car, which is pretty much a bad thing.
No.
So don't think it's a cool thing.
No, it's super cool. People don't even know what they're doing on the road. Drivers are crazy. They're like doing makeup and on the Facebook, and I don't trust them.
And on the Facebook.
On the Facebooks. They're on the Facebooks. Okay, to wrap it up, what is your advice for the younger generation that are interested in getting involved in tech industry, learning to code? What's a tip for them?
So the tip for me is just go do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, go build cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And don't try to emulate somebody else. Just try to learn it on your own. Take the time to read and learn new things. And also realize that you don't necessarily have to be a software engineer or build a website to be involved in tech.
Yep.
And that's one thing that people are like
me.
Yeah. You're involved in tech.
Yeah.
And you know all these cool
yeah.
things because you probably know more than I do because you listen to all these cool presentations that people do.
Yeah.
But like, there are different ways to get involved
yep.
in tech. Like, I know people who are artists who
mm-hmm.
are coders. I know journalists
Writers, yeah.
who are coders. The thing is that tech is going to be on writing any kind of lines of code.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be part of our lives.
Yeah.
So it's just like getting familiar with it. It's
mm-hmm.
not scary. It's like when you do math for the first time and you're just like,
mm-hmm.
and then you go and do it and you're just like, oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I was looking at the code base for something called Tag Helper Components
mm-hmm.
and it was 23 lines of code. And I was like, oh, those 23 lines makes all this fanciness happen
yeah.
in my code that nobody else sees.
Yeah.
And when you see things like that, you realize it's not as intimidating
mm-hmm.
as it is.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in college right now, if anyone is in college and there's an internship program, go do it because it just creates so many opportunities for you. Because in college is great for the fundamentals, but you don't get any of the practical skills. And internships is where I learned about things like C# and .NET and Visual Studio and other programming languages, because all I knew in school was Python and Java. And then I realized there's something called Ruby on Rails.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized like there's so many things that you miss when you're in college because all you're concentrating on is getting the assignments
yep.
done and doing well in school
mm-hmm.
and all those kind of things. So internships are so great for exposure.
Oh, yeah.
So great for exposure.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yay! What a great episode. With Maria Nagaga.
All right. I wish we could play Beyonce.
That was great. To taking over the world, girl.
Thank you.
See you guys next time.
See ya.